toss any rocks at all. He may have just been walking on a sidewalk on Mexican soil, an innocent passerby. Video of the shooting seems to be evidence that would belie the mainstream media's treatment of this story. That is beginning to come out now, despite the best efforts of mainstream media to suppress it. And sometimes you go to war with the enemy you have, not the enemy you wish you had, as Donald Rumsfeld might have put it. In manufactured crisis, investigative journalist Gareth Porter details the manipulation and fabrications that have accompanied the current Iranian nuclear situation. The main difference between this and the Iraq war conspiracy was that the neoconservatives who were carrying it out never got the war on Iran that they were after. And still to this day is in Israel, the cry is for war with Iran, and very likely behind the scenes something is brewing. Funny that we're listening into Angela Merkel's emails and communications. Well, the U.S. doesn't spend very much time on places like Crimea or, for that matter, Israel, where you would think the Israelis would come out and tell them what's going on. In any case, we have Gareth Porter on the line right now. Good morning, Gareth. Thank you so much for being with us today at such short notice.
Thank you.
This is a really important book. This is an extraordinary book, Manufactured Crisis. It details everything from the get-go. Can you talk a little bit? You recently did a terrific interview with Carl Marlin. And if you could just recap that for our listeners, because it is terribly important to understand what's going on.
Well, thank you, Chris. I think the key point is what you have alluded to, which is that this is, in many ways, a recap, a repeat of what we saw happen in the run-up to war in Iraq, which is that there has been a false intelligence case formulated over a period of years. And it was ostensibly, for the purpose of simply finding the truth at the International Atomic Energy Agency and indicting Iran for the purpose of putting pressure on them to stop whatever it was that they were doing with regard to their nuclear program. But in fact, this was an extremely dangerous policy by the Bush administration and, of course, by the Obama administration as well, which has bought into the entire false narrative that the Bush administration built from 2003, really, to 2000 through 2008. And I make the case in this interview that the United States is now in danger of really bringing down, or maybe I should say exploding, the nuclear negotiations with Iran, because they have introduced the very tainted evidence, the very falsified evidence and intelligence that was the basis for this case that has been made over the years into the talks with Iran. And it appears to be based on the belief that somehow the Iranians are going to, quote, come clean about their so-called covert nuclear weapons program on the assumption that, in fact, these documents were authentic. And I do believe that the high officials of the Obama administration live in a bubble and don't know the difference between this falsified evidence and the truth. And so they do believe that they are, in fact, in the process of trying to force the Iranians to tell the truth about this, when in fact they are on a course which is extremely dangerous, because the Iranians are not going to say that. They are going to say that this intelligence was falsified. So we are headed, I believe, toward a crisis in these talks, in large part because of this tainted intelligence evidence.
And what role is Israel playing here? I mean, I would imagine that a lot of the real negotiations are being handled in a sort of back room format, and that a great deal more is going on. What are the chances that this is perhaps for show? This is giving basically the world the sort of show that it demands, whereas in the back room, other discussions are taking place.
Well, I certainly agree that there has been a show been put on in the past by the Obama administration in conjunction with, or in sort of tacit understanding with Israel, which and that was a kind of a good cop, bad cop routine that took place in 2011 and 2012. Where the Obama administration claimed to be shocked that the Israelis were planning to attack Iran, and suggesting that they were doing their best to restrain the Israelis. Well, what was really going on was that the Obama administration was exploiting the Israeli threat of an attack to try to strengthen their hand in putting pressure on Iran on the nuclear issue. And they knew all the time that there was not going to be any Israeli attack on Iran. But to go back to the fundamental question, Chris, the evidence that I've been talking about, the falsified evidence, all came from Israel. And there's no question that the Israelis were hoping all along that this would lead to the same outcome that occurred in Iraq. And the neoconservatives had assured them, certainly John Bolton had assured them, that would be the case. But at this point, I think the problem is that the Israelis are continuing to fan the fires, fan the flames, by talking about this falsified evidence. And I think the Obama administration is still looking over its shoulder at Israel constantly in its negotiating posture with Iran, and that is playing a key role in their tendency to move toward this, what I think is going to be a crisis in the talks.
It's so clumsy, it's hard to believe. These are presumably intelligent, well-informed people. It's quite, as manufactured crisis details, this is a falsified evidence can't remain behind closed doors much longer.
Unfortunately, it can, as long as the news media will not cover this story, and I'm afraid that's the situation as we find it today. And you know, I'm not very optimistic about finding a chink in the fence here to get this story into the news media.
Can you talk a bit, just let listeners know before we let you go, we're running out of time here, how they can get their hands on Manufactured Crisis? It's a terribly important book, and it's very, very easy to get hold of.
Yes, please, people who are concerned about this issue, go to the Just World Books website. That's justworldbooks.com. They are the publisher of the book, and they'd be very happy to have people to contact them about the book. And of course, Amazon.com also has it, but you know, I think.
Yeah, but then it's Amazon.com. Gareth, thank you so much. We're out of time. I can hear the theme coming up. The article, the other interview is exceptional, and I do commend listeners' attention to that. Thanks very much for that. This has been Cascadia for Monday, March 24th, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Ear to the Streets is a dynamic and stimulating conversation setting that brings together independent, hardworking Black African voices from the community to talk about the core issues impacting us that are whitewashed in mainstream America. Stay tuned for an upcoming Ear to the Streets panel discussion with a mix of revolutionary music on April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. This next installment of Ear to the Streets will consist of conversations around the Black African community in Portland, Oregon, featuring Center for Self-Improvement, Moorish Science Temple, All African People's Revolutionary Party, and Par-Unc Kemetic Community, with a mix of music. Again, tune in April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Hi, I'm your host for The Union of Time Thieves, a new radio exploration of urban life. This episode, we will take a look at monuments, what they are, how they affect us, and how we can reclaim them. The Union of Time Thieves will be on the fourth Monday of each month from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
And also, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from xray.fm. The people at xray.fm would like to thank KBOO for 45 years of work in the service of better community radio for Portland and the world. XRAY.FM is proud to support the pioneering work of KBOO and wouldn't be here without it.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Coal provides 40% of the world's electricity and 39% of global carbon dioxide emissions. Mining coal is a deadly profession that destroys the natural environment. Transporting coal is also fraught with dangers, and clean coal is a myth. But getting the world off coal is easier said than done. Until we have a comprehensive renewable energy infrastructure, it looks like coal will remain a significant source of the world's energy. This morning, we talk with writer Michelle Nyhaus, whose article, Can Coal Ever Be Clean?, appears in the April issue of National Geographic. Michelle's article examines the feasibility of carbon capture and sequestration, and is being promoted as possibly the best way to make coal less dirty. Michelle, welcome to Locus Focus.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, when I think of clean coal, the first thing that comes to my mind are those ads that the Sierra Club ran a couple of years ago on television. Clean coal was a myth. And in your studies, as you were working and researching this article, did you find that when you walked to the clean coal power plant and opened the door that there was just a bare desert on the other side of the door?
Do you mean, did I find that, yes, clean coal was a myth?
Right.
Well, I think, the term clean coal has been misused by the coal industry. And the environmental movement, I think understandably so, has rebelled against it, saying, how can clean coal possibly exist? There are so many harmful effects of getting our power from coal, and they're right, and I detail many of those in my article, and you talked about many of them in your introduction. But I think when the debate stops there, when the coal industry says we want clean coal, and the environmental movement reacts by saying, well, clean coal is you know, just a myth, we can't even talk about it. I think when the debate stops there, we are doing a disservice to the environment and certainly to the people who suffer from the coal industry, because we're not really talking in practical terms about how we can make coal cleaner. We will never make it clean, but there are certainly technologies, things that can be done to make it cleaner, and significantly so.
I know, as people listening to this, I know from an email that I received this morning from a listener who was for responding to the notice that I sent out, and she was really glad that I was doing this show, and she sent me a notice about another effort to stop the coal trains. So people, I think, that are really concerned about issues like the coal trains, like the incredible carbon emissions from coal plants, all the problems of mountaintop removal mining, and all the other things that you outline in your article, that they can't even imagine how you could put clean and coal, or even cleaner and coal, in the same sentence. So I wonder, when you say that coal can be made cleaner, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is, I mean, you know, certainly I don't at all want to minimize the many negative effects of coal. And that wasn't the purpose of my article, and it's not the purpose of my talking with you today. But the reality is that renewable energy is not at the point where it can replace all of the power that we get from coal. You know, we can't shut off our coal plants tomorrow. And while coal use is certainly declining in the United States, it is not declining in the rest of the world, and I saw that firsthand. So I'm coming at this from a person who's reported a lot on climate change. I'm very aware of the severity of the climate change threat, and I think that we need not only a big push for renewable energy, a big push for efficiency, meaning a reduction in demand on all fronts, but we also need a way to reduce the CO2 that's coming out of the 600 coal plants that we still have in the U.S., and we need to do that in the short term. We need to do that sooner